Now, of course, with this atmosphere being created now, for sure, Uthman radiallahu anhu is one of the rightly guided khulafa. He's going to want to make sure if the situations in the cities, in the capitals, are as they claim in these letters. So he sends what we refer to as the fact-finding delegation. He sends a delegation to the cities and to see what's, if these claims are unfounded or not. And of course, when these complaints came, he gathered all the Sahaba and he discussed with them, what should we do with these complaints? And Talha radiallahu anhu suggested that the delegation should be sent to different provinces to find out the real facts behind the disturbances, if there is anything worth complaining about. And so the delegations were sent. Muhammad ibn Maslama radiallahu anhu was sent to Al-Kufa. Usama ibn Zayd was sent to Basra. And Ammar ibn Yasir sent to Egypt. And Abdullah ibn Umar radiallahu anhuma was sent to Syria, to Al-Sham, the area. And some of the other companions were sent to other provinces to investigate the reasons behind these disturbances. And apart from that, Uthman also sends a letter to be circulated all around the country. And he says in it, and we have it, it's been preserved in the books of history. He says, amongst the letter, he says, I always hear the complaints of my governors and high officials at the time of Hajj, and decides the matter there and then. But despite of that, I have been told that some of the governors and high officials mistreat and manhandle certain persons without any sound reason. I therefore hereby announce that any person who had any complaint against any of my governors or high official should report to me at the Hajj pilgrimage. And I'll do the justice, and the oppressed people will be compensated, and the oppressors will be taken to task. And he also offers them that I'm going to pay for your Hajj trip. You take the trip down to Hajj just to complain to me of one of my officials, I'm going to pay for your trip, and I'm going to bring justice to you and compensate you if you're oppressed. So then all the investigators of the delegations that were sent to Kufa and Basra and Egypt and Al-Sham, they returned and their reports were that none of the governors were found guilty of any evil act or excesses in behavior or in spending, and all of them were carrying out their duties within the bounds of the Sharia. This is the result of the fact-finding delegation. So we wonder at those people who take the side of the people of fitna and say, yes, Uthman was doing things that were unfair. This is a delegation, they come back and they say that nothing of that sort was going on. So then the people of Medina were happy to receive these reports and everyone was satisfied. So then they start to, there are many accusations. So one of them is that they start to accuse him of giving the wealth from the treasury of the Muslims to his family. And when he heard that, that bothered him. And he gathered people, including the people of fitna, this is later on when they come into Medina, and he tells them, he asks the people who are sitting there, I ask you by Allah, who amongst you witnessed Tabuk, the battle of Tabuk? And we mentioned this before. And this was like 35 years ago now. So there were a few people who were there who witnessed it. So some people said, we have witnessed it. And then he tells them, do you witness that the Prophet ﷺ said about him for preparing the army of Tabuk? And then he says to them that the well of Roma, that he bought it from his personal wealth, and the Prophet ﷺ gave him glad tidings of a spring in paradise. And the people said, yes, we have witnessed that. And then he tells them that I spend. Because now, what's happening here? When they accuse him now of stealing from Bayt al-Mal and giving to his relatives, this upset him. So he gets up and gives this talk, saying, didn't you hear what the Prophet ﷺ said about me at Tabuk? Did you hear what the Prophet ﷺ said about me when I bought the well of Roma? And now, these people are saying that I'm giving Bani Umayyah from the treasury of the Muslims. But he says that I give them money from my personal wealth. Wallahi, I never took a thing from the money of the Muslims. And he used to give generously because we said he's a very wealthy merchant. So he used to give in the thousands to his family. And he explains that he's an old man and he was 83 years old and he had much wealth. So why not spend it on his wealth on his own family? And when people said that Umar used to be harsh on his relatives, the man responds saying, verily, Umar did that seeking to be close to Allah. When Umar was being harsh on his family, he was doing that for the sake of Allah, so as not to show favoritism. And then Uthman radiallahu anhu says, and I do this seeking closeness to Allah. Taking care of my family, seeking closeness to Allah. And both of them are correct. You can't say that this is the only way to adopt. You can do it either way. So he's saying, I'm seeking closeness to Allah through spending upon my family. One of the other accusations was that they were saying he used to favor his relatives and put them in places of government. And he gives them an example. He says, Muhammad ibn Hudhayfa was like a son to me. And he wanted to be appointed to a post, but I refused to do so because I did not consider him fit to bear such responsibility. So when he would put people from Bani Umayyah as governors in cities, he would put people whom he felt were capable or qualified. And some people were actually already there when Uthman radiallahu anhu became the Khalifa. They were already in these posts, so Uthman didn't put them there. So he's explaining that he only puts people whom he feels are capable of being in that position. So now I want to look at the events of the 34th year after the Hijrah, which is when the fitan start. And Uthman ibn Affan ordered that all the governors come to meet him in Medina after Hajj for consultations. This is the 34th year after the Hijrah. So he starts to consult people what they think they should do. Abdullah ibn Amr suggested that although these people should be taken and they should be made to engage in activities of jihad, just to fill their free time and have them busy with going out and fighting in jihad. Take them in the areas where there's jihad going on. And this is the consultation. Then Sa'id ibn al-As radiallahu anhu suggested that the leaders of these troublemakers should be taken and punished, and that would scare away everyone else, all the followers. This was the opinion of Sa'id ibn al-As radiallahu anhu. And then Muawiyah radiallahu anhu suggested that the governors of each province should make sure they just clear their province of their existence. And then Abdullah ibn Sa'ad suggests that all of them are greedy and that they could just be subdued by giving them some money and some wealth and they'll stay quiet. And some actually suggested that they should be put to death. Just grab them and just kill them. But Uthman radiallahu anhu disagreed. He said that he could not punish people unless to the limits prescribed by the Qur'an. He couldn't just punish people and kill them like that. And just to show you how the lay person, the normal person, was so affected by these rumors and the misinformation that was spreading, we have this narration in Sahih al-Bukhari where an Egyptian man, meaning a man from Misr, from Egypt, comes. He came to perform the Hajj to the Kaaba and saw people sitting there. So he asked, "Who are these people?" And then someone said, "They are the tribe of Quraysh." So the man asked, "Who is the old man sitting amongst them?" And the people replied, "He is Abdullah ibn Umar." And he said, "O ibn Umar," so he comes to him, "O ibn Umar, I want to ask you about something. Please tell me about it. Do you know that Uthman fled away on the day of the Battle of Uhud?" And ibn Umar said, "Yes." And then the Egyptian man, the man said, "Do you know that Uthman was absent on the day of the Battle of Badr and did not join it?" Ibn Umar said, "Yes." And the man said, "Do you know that he failed to attend the pledge of Ridwan and did not witness it?" And Ibn Umar said, "Yes." And the man said, "Allahu Akbar." So khalas, now we have the evidence against him. Even scholars like Ibn Umar are saying this is true. So then Ibn Umar says to him, "Let me explain to you all these things. As for his flight," meaning fleeing on the day of Uhud, "I testify that Allah excused him and has forgiven him." This is the ayah where Allah revealed that He has forgiven those who run away at Uhud. "And as for absence from the Battle of Badr, it was due to the fact that the daughter of Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam was his wife and was sick then. And Allah's Messenger said to him, 'You will receive the same reward and the share," meaning the spoils of war, "as anyone of those who participated in the battle. If you stay with her, you'll get the same reward. And as for his absence from the pledge of Ridwan, had there been any person in Mecca more respectable than Uthman to be sent to represent the Muslims, Allah's Messenger would have sent him instead. No doubt Allah's Messenger had sent him, and the incident of Ridwan and the pledge of Ridwan happened after Uthman had gone into Mecca. And Allah's Apostle, Allah's Prophet, held out his hand, saying, 'This is Uthman's hand.' And he put his other hand in it, saying, 'This pledge is on behalf of Uthman.' And then Ibn Umar said to the man, 'Bear these excuses in mind with you.'" But it just shows you, this narration shows you how much people were affected by the news that was spreading and the atmosphere that was being created by the people of Fitna. Now, Ibn Saba's group and the people of Fitna, their numbers had grown. They had large numbers now. And they had grown in strength. So they agreed to meet in Medina in Shawwal in the 35th year after the Hijrah. And Ibn al-Arabi says, describing the people in this group, he says some of them had the punishment prescribed upon them by Uthman. So these people transgressed, and Uthman had whatever the prescribed punishment was, they were dealt with in that manner. And he gives examples. Sawdan ibn Hamran, he had married a woman during her waiting period. And this is not permissible. So Uthman separated them. He forced him to divorce her. And he punished him. And this upset him. So Uthman didn't do anything wrong here. He did something wrong. But this upsets him. So he comes out with the people of fitna. Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr as-Siddiq, he was also punished by Uthman for something that he transgressed. And this upset him also. When he had done a sin, Uthman punished him for it. And now he joins the people of fitna. Others were people who hated the religion, such as Abdullah ibn Sabah. And he spearheaded the fitna. And there were people who were known to be thieves. We mentioned Hakim ibn Jabala, who is known to be a highway robber. Now there is Kumail ibn Ziyad, and he is a thief, and he was known. The Muslims knew he was a thief, but they couldn't prove it. So Kumail ibn Ziyad, when he hears of the movement, he joins it as well. And all of them had collectively agreed that they're going to remove Uthman from the Khilafah. But they had not agreed on who's going to be in his place. So they would say that, you know, that he did not join the Battle of Badr, that he ran away on Uhud, he did not pledge in Radwan. And so why have him as the Khalifa? And there were people amongst us today who have not run away from Uhud and who witnessed Badr and who were there at the pledge of Radwan. So this is what they're saying, that there are better people to be the Khulafa besides Uthman. And they're saying that he spends on his relatives and he gives them from the treasury of the Muslims and he puts them in leadership positions. So the people of the fitna, when they started, they gathered and they decided to meet in Medina. So how did they come out without being caught and without being recognized as an army advancing to Medina? They disguised themselves as Hujjaj, as if they're going for Hajj. So the group in Egypt, Saif ibn Amr al-Dabbi, is the narrator. He says when it was Shawwal in the 35th year after the Hijrah, the people of Egypt came out with the Hujjaj, as if they're going for Hajj, but stopped at Medina and let the other people go on their way to Mecca. They came out as if they were Hujjaj in four groups under four Amirs. So they were very organized. And the maximum narration says that there were 1,000 people. And the least of these narrations is that there were 600. And at the head of one group was Abdurrahman ibn Udays al-Balawi. And at the head of another group was Sawdan ibn Humran. And another was Qutaylah. And in charge of the entire group of Egypt was Al-Ghafiqi ibn Harb. This is the group of Egypt. The group of Kufa that came out from Al-Kufa, they came into four groups also. And they had the Amirs, and we know the names of their Amirs. Zayd ibn Sahwan al-Abdi, and Al-Ashtar al-Nukhi'i, and we said we're going to hear this name many times, and Abdullah ibn al-Asam from Bani Amr, and Zayd ibn Nadr al-Harithi. And their number was equal to the number of those in Egypt, meaning anywhere from 600 to 1,000. And in charge of the entire group, Amr ibn al-Asam was in charge. And the group of Basra then also came out in four groups. And they were Hukaym ibn Jabal al-Abdi, who was Hukaym ibn Jabal, the highway robber we spoke about. And the emir of the entire group was Al-Hurqus ibn Zuhair al-Sa'di. And they head out from Basra. All of them wanted to remove Uthman, but they could not decide on who was going to be the Khalifa after Uthman radiallahu anhu. So they come and they camped outside of Medina, and they sent some people in to Medina to see what the atmosphere was in Medina. Are they going to be able to gather some support from inside Medina? Are the people of Medina against Uthman, or do they support Uthman? So they sent people to speak to Ammar ibn Yasir in particular. Ammar ibn Yasir radiallahu anhu, it wasn't that he was of those who revolted against Uthman, but he made some observations on how Uthman was running. I mean, we won't expect that all the Sahaba will be pleased with everything that any Khalifa does. There will be some flaws, and Ammar ibn Yasir radiallahu anhu made these observations. So they felt perhaps Ammar would be on their side. So they went in to see what the atmosphere was in Medina, and they found that they're not going to get any support in Medina. So they camp right outside of Medina. The Sahaba, they heard the news of this camp, that they're outside and they're going to attack Medina. So Ali radiallahu anhu and Talha and Zubair, they took arms and they said, if you enter Medina, we're going to meet you with our weapons. You can't enter. So the people of fitna lost hope. They didn't want to find such resistance, to encounter resistance. So they said that it's over. Al-Ashtar al-Nukhi'in, others who were with him, the people of fitna, said it's over and we're going to return. So when they return, people of Medina said, okay, they're gone. We can put our weapons away. And they put their weapons away and they consider this camp, this army now has left. They're going on their way back. Suddenly at night, people of fitna come and they fill the streets of Medina and they're yelling and they have their swords out and they're saying, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, making takbir, and they just controlled the city. So what they did, they caught the Sahaba off guard. They put their weapons away and they come back again. There is a narration here that we're going to mention. And this narration, it seems, and Allah knows best, is the excuse they made for their sudden return. But sometimes you find books mention it as one of the actual reasons or something that actually happened. They said that after 3 nights of journeying, they found, this is a story related by the people of Fitna. Because when they came back with their swords out and they controlled Medina, they said, Sahaba can't bear any swords or any weapons. No one can carry weapons except them. And they're in control. Ali asked them, what brings you back? You left. Because in the other narration, they came and they complained. When they found the Sahaba took their weapons and they stopped them from entering Medina, they said, we didn't come to fight. We just want to complain from one of the governors. So they told them, okay, we'll remove him. Who do you want in his place? They said, we want Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr in his place to be the governor of Egypt. So they said, okay, Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr is the governor of Egypt. Go, remove the other one and you're in charge. So they said, okay, that's fine, and they leave. So the truth is, they don't want Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr to be the governor of Egypt. They want to remove Uthman. So when they left, the Muslims put their guard down and then suddenly they come back into Medina. Ali radiallahu anhu asked them, I thought we agreed, we gave you what you wanted. Why did you come back again? So they say that they were journeying. This is a story they gave. They were journeying for 3 nights. Then they found a black servant boy striking his riding animal as if he's running away or chasing after someone. So you can imagine, as if someone's running after him and he's just beating his animal viciously, trying to run to speed up. And they asked him, what is wrong? And the servant boy says, I have a letter from Amir al-Mu'mineen, meaning Uthman, to the governor of Egypt. So they told him, the governor of Egypt is with us, Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr. And he leaves them. Later on, they were surprised, so he leaves. Then they told Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr the story. He says, bring him, bring the boy. So they brought him, they went looking for him, and they brought this boy and they brought him back. So Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr asks him, whose servant are you? And the boy says, this is how they narrated. One time he would say, I'm the servant of Amir al-Mu'mineen. And then one time he would say, I'm the servant of Marwan ibn al-Hakam, the uncle of Uthman radiallahu anhu. One man identified him. He says, I know him. He's the servant of Uthman. And they told him, who are you sent to? He says, I am sent to the governor of Egypt. With what? With a letter. Is the letter with you? No. It's kind of a strange narration. He's sent with a strange letter. And when they stop him, he says, I'm sent with a letter. And then when they stop him the next time, one time he's saying Amir al-Mu'mineen, one time he's saying Marwan. He could have said anything. If he's going actually sent with this letter from Uthman, he would have said a lie or avoided them. And then they ask him, with what are you sent? He says, with a letter. Then they ask, is it with you? He says, no. Just, it doesn't make sense. If he were to lie, he would have thought of better responses than this. So then they searched his belongings and they found the letter. And they took it out, and Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr read it out loud in front of everyone. And it says in the letter, if Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr and so and so and so and so, naming some people, come to you, then kill them. And disregard the letter he brings you. Because Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr was taking a letter to say, you're no longer the governor, Muhammad is the new governor. So this letter is telling him, disregard the letter that he's going to bring you, and remain in your position, stay as the governor. And imprison all those who come complaining to me about you. So don't let anyone reach me. Imprison them if they're going to complain about you. Until further instructions, inshallah. We discussed Uthman radiallahu anhu. Does this sound like Uthman radiallahu anhu? He would do something so treacherous and have people killed. He's the one who refused the opinion that they should be killed. He says this is beyond the limits of the Book of Allah. And here, they attribute such a letter to him. So then, he reads this letter and then they return to Medina and they gather the Sahaba and Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr reads it to them. So then this is continuing on with that narration as we're taking. Ali and Talha and Zubair and Sa'd entered upon Uthman and they said, "Is this your boy, your servant?" And he said, "Yes." "Is this camel yours?" He said, "Yes." "Did you write this letter?" He says, "No." And he swore by Allah. And then some of them said they noticed that it was the writing of Marwan ibn al-Hakam. And this whole fiasco with the letter and this whole story was a lie, of course, that they made up. It was just an excuse to quickly come back into Medina while the people are not expecting it. Because Ali caught this lie, radiallahu anhu. And he said to them, "How did you come to know, the people of Kufa and Basra, of what happened to the people of Egypt, and discover that and after you were already a few days into your journey?" So what Ali radiallahu anhu is saying, he's asking them, the people of Egypt, they went in one direction. And the people of Kufa and Basra, they went in another direction, the opposite direction. And both are traveling for 3 days in opposite directions. So if after 3 days the people of Egypt catch this letter, how did they have time to inform the people of Basra and Kufa? The distance between them now is probably around 6 days between them. Right? So when they found this letter, they came back to Medina. So Ali is asking them, what brought the people of Kufa and Basra back? Because they were traveling in another direction. How did you have enough time to go to them and let them know of this letter and come back again? That would have taken you now at least 9 days. So he tells them, هذا والله أمر أبرم في المدينة. It says, by Allah, this is an affair that was prepared here in Medina. Before you left, you had prepared that after 3 days, you're going to come back at the same time. So then, what did they tell Ali radiallahu anhu? They said, explain it however you want. They don't care. You caught us, you didn't catch us. We don't care, we're in charge, we're in control. They said, we don't want this man, so let him leave the khilafah or abdicate. So the Sahaba were not able to oppose them now. They're in control of the city. And then Uthman leaves his home. So now they're in control of the city, but they still allow Uthman radiallahu anhu to go, to leave his home and go for salah. So he goes and he leads the salah. And the people of fitna are there and he leads them in salah. And then after the salah, he gathers the Sahaba and he tells them, "Do you want me to resign? If you suggest that I should resign, I will do it immediately." And he has no love, particular love for the Khilafah or anything. So then, Ali and Talha and Zubair and Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas and Abdullah ibn Abbas, all of them say, "Don't do it. These people, they're not worth it." They all said, "Don't do it." This is against what people say. Ali wanted the Khilafah, radiallahu anhu. All of them said, "Don't leave, don't resign." And Abdullah ibn Abbas says, "Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, لا تنزع قميصا قمصك الله إياه." That do not remove a shirt, a garment that Allah has clothed you with. So he's telling him that, is it every time that people are angry with the Khalifa that they remove him? It just becomes a joke then, the Khilafa. So then Uthman says, لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله. So the result of the consultation with the Sahaba, with no exception, that he should not resign. So he decides to remain in his position. So when Uthman saw the people of Medina not able to do anything, what did he do? He wrote messages in secret and sent them. While the people of Fitna were waiting for his decision, he sent messages to each wilaya, each major city. And these messages are preserved in the books of history and details of what he sent to this province and to that province. And these messengers reached Al-Amsar. Al-Amsar are the plural of Misr. Misr is actually just a large city. So when we say the Amsar with a meme, Amsar, not like the Muhajirin and Ansar. The Amsar, it means Al-Kufa, Basra, Al-Sham, the places in Al-Sham, Egypt, all these places. The first to send an army was Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan. Immediately sent a quick army, put it together and send it out while he's putting together a larger army, because it takes more time. So he sends a small army in advance and he's preparing a large army. And then Abdullah ibn Sa'd ibn Abi Sarh in Egypt sends an army under Muawiyah ibn Khudayj al-Sukuni. And in Kufa, al-Qa'qa' ibn Amr, the man equal to 1,000 warriors, he gathers some warriors and he led them himself, and he orders some of the Sahaba with them to encourage the people and to arrange the rest of the town to prepare another large army. And he advances ahead. And of those who encouraged and prepared the army were Uqba ibn Amr, companions who stayed in Kufa, encouraging the people to join the army. Uqba ibn Amr and Abdullah ibn Abi Awfa, and Handala ibn Rabi' al-Tamimi from the companions of the Prophet ﷺ. They started to gather the people. They would walk around the town, going to gatherings, going to public places, saying, "Oh people, the speech is the speech of today and not of tomorrow. And we have to look into this affair today and not tomorrow. And the fighting is halal today and it's haram tomorrow. Rush to your Khalifa." So they're going around the Al-Kufa and they're encouraging people to join the armies, to go save the Khalifa. That now the city, the holy city of the Prophet ﷺ, is besieged and these troublemakers are in control. So they're gathering people. Armies start to pour from all around the Muslim Ummah. And the same with Al-Basra, and the same with Al-Sham, all these people, all the Sahaba, heading out to save the Khalifa of the Muslims. So while these armies were being gathered, events were unfurling in Medina. On the first day, this is on the first Friday, since the Thuwar, or the people of Fitna, the rebels, this is the first Friday since they came and entered Medina. Uthman enters the masjid to give the khutbah. He gets up on the minbar and he praises Allah and he sends the salah and salam upon his messenger Muhammad. And then he says, "Ya ha'ula al-uda, O you enemies or people who transgressed against us, Allah Allah, by Allah the people of Medina know that you are cursed upon the tongue of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So erase your mistakes with that which is correct, for verily Allah does not erase the bad deeds except with good." So then Muhammad ibn Maslama got up and said, "And I bear witness to that." He wants the people to start the fighting now. He gets up and he says, "And I bear witness to that." And then Zayd ibn Thabit gets up and he says that he is ready to swear upon that. So then the people of Fitna felt that they're going to lose control. People now are starting to outwardly oppose them. So Hukaym ibn Jabal, the thief, got up to Muhammad ibn Maslama with the sword and forced him to sit down. And Muhammad ibn Abi Qutayra raised the sword to Zayd ibn Thabit and forced him to sit down. And then they cursed at them. They're Sahaba. They're cursing at the Sahaba. Cursed and cussed at them excessively. So tempers flared. Everyone gets up in the masjid. And the people of Fitna got up with their swords. And the Sahaba are not allowed to carry swords. So they start to throw stones at them. And the people of Fitna are hitting them. And they start to throw stones back at them. And one of the stones that were being thrown around struck Uthman radiallahu anhu. And he's an old man, 83 years old. And he fell unconscious and he was carried to his home. Such disrespect for the masjid of the Prophet ﷺ, for the city of the Prophet ﷺ, for the Khalifa of the Muslims, and for the Sahaba. So Ali and Talha and Zubair entered upon Uthman radiallahu anhu. They wanted to visit him while he was sick and to consult with him also. So Uthman commands him to do nothing. And we said before, he knew the details that he's going to be killed and that it's a fitna. So he tells him, "Don't do anything. Just wait for the armies that are approaching. We can't do anything. We're powerless." And Uthman radiallahu anhu also feared that the Sahaba in their enthusiasm would resist and then get killed, and large numbers of the Sahaba, and we said before that how valuable they are, that large numbers of Sahaba would get killed. So he gathered all the people in the masjid and he gave them his last khutbah before he was murdered. And he says some beautiful words. He begins and he praises Allah and he sends the salah upon his messenger. And then he says, "Verily, Allah has given you the dunya so you may seek with it the hereafter, the akhirah." Wonderful meanings. He's telling them, Allah is giving you this dunya so you can with it use it to get to the hereafter. And He did not give it to you so you could be attached to it. Verily, the dunya fades away and the akhirah remains. So do not be fooled by that which fades away and don't let it divert you from that which remains. So prefer that which remains over that which fades, for the dunya ends and the journey is to Allah. Fear Allah, for taqwa of Him is a protection from His punishment, and a way to Him, and beware of Allah's ghira, meaning don't approach His sanctified places and things that He's made haram. And stick with the jama'ah and don't become ahzab, don't become split into groups and factions. And mention the blessing of Allah upon you as you were enemies. So He united your hearts and you became through His blessing brothers. He's mentioning the ayah. So then he tells them, so go out, may Allah have mercy on you, and leave my doors. He's telling them, no protection. No one to protect me, and no one to lift a sword. And he calls Talha and Zubair and Ali, and they come and he tells everyone to sit down. So they all sit down. And then he says, oh people of Medina. This is still in the masjid. He has everyone sit down. He says, oh people of Medina, I bid you farewell. Bidding him farewell, he knows it's the end. And I ask him, meaning Allah, to give you a good khalifa after me. And by Allah, I will not let anyone enter upon me after this day until Allah decrees his judgment on me. And I will leave those, meaning the people of fitna, I will not give them anything from what they have asked. Not the deen, not the dunya. They're not going to get anything from me. Until Allah does what he wants with this affair. And he insists on the people of Medina to go back home, and he swore by Allah that they will. He swears to them, by Allah, you're going to go home, no one's going to bear arms, no one's going to resist. If anyone sees I have any right over them, he's telling them, if you feel I have any right over you as your khalifa, you will not carry a weapon. And this, of course, explains why the Sahaba did not defend him until his death. Some people use this to say they wanted him to die. We can't expect this from the companions of the Prophet ﷺ. So everyone goes home. But the Sahaba didn't want to leave him unprotected. So Ali radiallahu anhu sent Al-Hasan and Al-Husayn. And he tells them, remain in his courtyard, to stay in his yard. And they took weapons and they stayed there. And then Al-Zubair ibn al-Awwam sent his son, the warrior, Abdullah ibn al-Zubair. And Talha ibn Ubaidullah sent his son, Muhammad, and others of the Sahaba sent. So now we have a number of the young Sahaba, and we should refer to them as the young Sahaba, are in the courtyard of Uthman radiallahu anhu with weapons, and the people of fitna are outside of the house, and Uthman radiallahu anhu is inside the house. So now news reaches the people of fitna of the armies that are coming to save Medina. So they have a meeting. The people of fitna, they have a meeting, they say, what should we do? Because now an army is coming to destroy them. They say, if they reach us, we're dead. The only solution is to kill Uthman. We call Uthman radiallahu anhu. There's going to be a mess. There's not going to be a khalifa. There's not going to be anyone in charge. And within this commotion, we can escape. But if we pull out, just right now leave and pull out, they're going to catch up to us and they were going to kill us. And if we remain and don't kill him, they're going to kill us. So the only solution, no other solution. The only way is to kill Uthman. So they all agreed upon that. Now we're up to, at this point, 18 days of them controlling Medina. And the armies are on their way. And the 18th day was on the day of this decision, when they decided to kill Uthman. And they encircled the house of Uthman radiallahu anhu. And they said the best thing is to let him die alone. Because at the same time they're crafty and they're trying to come up with a plan. So they said the best thing is not to kill him so as we literally have his blood on our hands. The best thing is to let him die alone. And what's the only way we can do that so that they don't come after us? To prevent him from drinking water. And you know, when someone doesn't drink water, in 3 days they can die. So the first day, Uthman radiallahu anhu has no water to drink, and he's patient upon that. And the second day, he has no water. And his house was attached to his neighbor's house, is Amr ibn Hazm. So he sent to them, saying, assist us, send us some water. But they didn't have enough water. And some narrations will tell you they gave him water, salty water. Which of course doesn't solve anything. It makes the situation worse. So he says, inform Ali and the mothers of the believers. So they informed everyone. So Ali, immediately as he's told, he comes to soften the hearts of the people of fitna. He comes to them at night and he talks to them. He talks to their leaders. Ya ayyuhan nas, he says, oh people, what you're doing doesn't resemble the actions of the Muslims nor that of the non-Muslims. He tells them, don't prevent the man from water. Verily the Romans and the Persians, when they capture the enemy, they feed them and they give them water. So he tells them, what has he done to you so that you treat him in this treatment? And he's always being lenient to them. He's not punished them. And he's telling them, he orders the people not to take up arms against you, not to resist you. What else do you want? So in what do you make besieging and killing him halal? They said, no, by Allah. We will not let him eat nor drink. So Ali radiallahu anhu saw that they're not going to allow him to drink, and he did all that he could, so he took off his turban and he threw it into the courtyard of Uthman radiallahu anhu. He had a turban that he wore. It was well known that it was his turban. So when the young Sahaba saw it, we said the ones who were guarding Uthman, when they saw it, they understood that Ali was here, and obviously he tried to do something about the water situation. The mother of the believers hear of this. Of the mothers of the believers, Safiya radiallahu anha, she came on a mule, and she brought water under her garment for Uthman radiallahu anhu. So when the people saw her, they opened the path for her. Because the mothers of the believers, they had a special place in the hearts of the Muslims. So when they saw her approaching, they all opened the path for her, and she got all the way to the door. And then one of the people of fitna stood in front of her, and he told her, "What is with you?" And she says, "I am Safiya, the mother of the believers, and I am here to see Uthman." Then he asks her, "What is with you?" And she doesn't answer. And he uncovers the garment, and he finds like a pot of water, and he hits it and he breaks it. And he gets so mad, he hits the mule, the face of the mule, so that it turns and it starts running, and the mother of the believer, Safiya radiallahu anha, almost fell off the mule, had it not been for some people who were able to stop the animal. So even with the mothers of the believers, they did not have much respect for them in this way. So when news of this reaches Uthman radiallahu anhu, and this is something very shocking, he gave orders to move all of the mothers of the believers to Mecca. And Aisha radiallahu anha at this time had already intended to make Hajj. Remember, this is right before the season of Hajj. So she had intended to make Hajj. And look at this narration. She goes to her brother, Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr, and she tells him, "You know, come out with me for Hajj as her mahram." And he refuses. So she knew how serious this issue was. He's refusing to come out as a mahram for one of the Muslims, the believers. And she says, "By Allah, if I were able to prevent them from what they want to do, I will do it." So Aisha sees how serious their affair is, how serious this is. And she says, "If I'm ever able to stop them from doing what they want to do, I'm going to do that." Another companion, Hamdullah al-Katib, comes to Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr and says, "Aisha is calling you to go out with her, and you refuse. The mother of the believer calls you, and you don't go out with her. And the worst of the Arabs ask you, and you respond to them." He's telling him, "You don't respond to the mothers of the believers, but you respond to these people, the worst of the Arabs, and you're going out with them, and you're joining forces with them." So Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr yells at him, and he sends him away. So then Uthman radiallahu anhu gets on the roof of his house, and he delivers a speech from there to get to speak to the people. And he tells them, when the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam built his first masjid, it was very small. He asked, "Who will purchase a land for its expansion? And I promise him, or guarantee him, that he will get his place in paradise. And I came forward to obey his order." So then he says, "Why is it that you people don't allow me to offer my prayers in that very masjid?" He's telling them, "I expanded that masjid with my own money, and the Prophet gave me glad tidings of paradise. Now you come and prevent me from praying in that masjid?" And then he tells them, "I ask you to tell me, by Allah, that when the Prophet came to Medina, there was only one well of Roma or Aroma, which contained drinking water, and there was none other. And the Prophet said, 'Who will buy this well and put a trust to the Muslims? Whosoever will do so, it will get better than this in paradise. And it was me who honored this wish. Why have you stopped me to drink from the water of that very same well?'" Salim, "I'm the one who bought this well. Now you're preventing me to drink from it?" And then he also tells them, "Do you know that the army of Usra was prepared by me?" And that everyone answers, "By Allah, every word you spoke, every word you have spoken is true." So Uthman felt that the issue had gone too far, and he had sent Abdullah ibn Abbas to be in charge of the Hajj in his place. So he sent a letter to the Hujjaj, and he explains the situation. This happened before they prevented him from water. When the people of fitna entered, he sent a letter to Abdullah ibn Abbas at Hajj, explaining the situation that they've come and taken over Medina. So Ibn Abbas, he's the Amir of Hajj, he receives a letter, and he reads the letter to the Hujjaj on the 8th day of the Hijjah. And so many of the Hujjaj, when they heard this, they slaughtered quickly on the day of Eid and left immediately to Medina to help the Khalifa. Some of them, when they arrived at the time when the water was prevented from Uthman. And others, when they arrived, it was too late. They had already murdered Uthman radiallahu anhu. So the people of fitna intended to kill Uthman, and the water didn't work. It's not working. So they heard news that the army of Hashem, the army of Syria, reached the valley of Dhil Qura, which is 3 days away from Medina. So they were very afraid now. They're consulting with each other. What are we going to do? So they said, who will go in to Uthman and either get him to resign or kill him? So one of them agreed to do it. And he came to go in, and the young Sahaba feared for Uthman. So they prevented him. And Abdullah ibn Zubair was in charge of them. So they tried to enter by force, and the Sahaba stopped them. So now a fight starts between the people of Fitna and the youth of the Sahaba. And it was a fierce fight. And the youth of the Sahaba were successful at preventing them from entering into the home of Uthman. And some of the youth were wounded severely. It's narrated that Al-Hasan ibn Ali radiallahu anhuma was stained with all the blood from the arrows that they shot at him. And the people of Fitna, some of them, had been killed by the youth of the Sahaba. So then news reaches Uthman that there's killing going on in his courtyard. So he calls Abdullah ibn Zubair. He says, who ordered you to do that? Who ordered you to defend me and to fight these people? He says, oh Amir, they prevented you from water and they wanted to enter upon you and to harm you. So he says, I have ordered that the weapons are to be put down. And I do not make halal a drop of blood in my cause. This is Uthman radiallahu anhu. Now he orders Abdullah ibn Zubair to go home and to leave the house of Uthman. He ordered him to go home and all of them to go home. So he tells them, oh Amir al-Mu'mineen, they will enter upon you. And he tells them, so be it. If that's the case, let it happen. So they all left, Al-Hasan, Al-Husayn, Muhammad ibn Talha. No one left except Abdullah ibn Zubair. He refused to go. He insisted. Even though the Khalifa ordered him to go, he insisted to stay because he knows they want to kill him. So the people of Fitna wanted to enter. When they came, they found Abdullah ibn Zubair. So they decided to find another plan. Because he was not a normal warrior. They were afraid of him. Even though he's one man. So what they did, they set the external gate of the house on fire to get it out of the way. This gate was attached to another covering that went all the way to the door of the house. So all of that burnt down. And now they can enter from any side of the house. There's no external wall or gate. So Abdullah ibn Zubair then decided to stay and stand in front of the house, in front of the door to the house. But of course there were other doors, there were windows, there are many ways you can get into the house. But he stood at the door. And at night, one of them, the people of Fitna, comes from the side and enters upon Uthman. And he yells, leave it and we'll leave you. Meaning, leave the Khilafah, we'll leave you alone. So then Uthman tells him, woe to you. Wallahi, I have never uncovered a woman in Jahiliyyah nor in Islam. So he's telling him, how could you enter my house from a window and there are women in the house and they could be uncovered. And so he's reminding him to have haya. He's telling him, I don't do this to my own family, not in Jahiliyyah, not even in Islam. And I have never, he tells him, I have never put my right hand on my privates since I had pledged to the Prophet ﷺ. He's showing that once he pledged with his right hand to the Prophet ﷺ, he never let it touch his privates again. It shows how much respect. Shows what type of person he was. And I will not remove a garment that Allah has clothed me with, and I'm upon my state until Allah honors the people of happiness and disgraces the people of wretchedness. And where does he get this sentence from? I will not remove a garment that Allah has clothed me with. This is from the hadith what the Prophet ﷺ told him. So the man was taken aback by this. And he felt ashamed and he left. So they came to his group, the people of Fitna. They said to him, what did you do? He said, عَلَّقْنَا وَاللَّهِ. He said, we're in a predicament. We have a problem here. He says, وَاللَّهِ, nothing will save us from people except killing him. And it's not permissible for us to do so. The only thing that's going to save us from these armies coming to us is to kill Uthman. And killing him is not permissible for us. So they tried something else. They took stones and they start to throw. They throw these stones at his windows and at his house. So he came to them from the window. And he said, woe to you. Don't you know that there are others besides me in the house? He's telling their women, their children, there are other people besides me. You want to hit me, but you could hurt others. So one of them said to him in a way, in a sardonic way, in a mocking way, we were not the ones who threw them at you. So he asked them, who was it then? They said, Allah threw them at you. He said, you have lied. كَذَبْتْ وَخَسَأْتْ. If Allah threw them at me, He wouldn't have missed. Allah, Allah. And you have missed me. So they felt ashamed. These are strong words. They felt ashamed. So they left. What to do now? So they sent another man, telling him, rid us of him. And a man from Bani Layth. So he enters upon Uthman. Uthman tells him, where from? Where are you from? He tells him, Layfi, meaning I'm from Bani Layth. He tells him, you are not the one. So the man is surprised. He tells him, how is that? So then Uthman tells him, aren't you the ones that the Prophet ﷺ made dua for you on the day of such and such? Because the Prophet ﷺ had made dua for Bani Layth, for Allah to preserve them. So he said, yes. He said, so you won't be lost. So yani, the Prophet ﷺ makes dua for you people, you're not going to be lost and get into something like killing the Khalifa. So the man returned and he left the people of Fitna, never joined them again. So they sent a man, another man from Quraysh, and he enters, he says, oh Uthman, I'm going to kill you. And he tells him, no, la ya fulan, no ya fulan, oh so and so, you won't kill me. So the man tells him, how is that? He tells him, the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had made istighfar on the day of such and such, so you will not shed unlawful blood. So he's telling him that the Prophet ﷺ made istighfar for you, people of Quraysh, on that day. So you're not going to shed blood that's not halal. So the man made istighfar and he left the people of Fitna, never returning to them again. During this time, Abdullah ibn Salam, who is one of the companions, he used to be Jewish and he's of the earliest of Jews who became Muslim. He came to the people of Fitna and he said to them, O people, look at the wise words he's telling them. Do not unsheathe the sword of Allah against you. By Allah, if you unsheathe it, it will not be sheathed again. He's telling them that all of you are going to be killed. There's going to be a lot of killing after this. Woe to you, your sultan today rules with the birra, which is just a stick that Umar used to hold and he would just tap people with. He used to rule with the stick. So return, because if you kill him, wallahi, the sultan will not rule except with the sword. And he has spoken the truth. Since that time on, you will always hear of the Khalifa with his swords and scaring people and beheading people. So he spoke the truth, radiallahu anhu. He tells them all to you, this city is encircled with the angels of Allah. Wallahi, if you kill him, the angels will leave it. So this man is a Sahabi, he's giving him this good advice. Look how they respond to him. They tell him, O son of a Jewish woman, is this any of your concern? And they sent him away. They speak to him with disrespect. He's one of the companions and they sent him away. So then the last attempt, they sent Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr to go to Uthman and to convince him to resign. And he enters upon Uthman. And as we said before, he had committed a sin and Uthman had performed the prescribed punishment upon him. So he actually, in a sense, took away the right of Allah from him. And this is the right of Allah that he should be punished in such a way. So when Muhammad ibn Abu Bakr enters upon Uthman, Uthman sees him with the people of Fitna, he tells him, وَيْلَكْ أَعَلَى اللَّهِ تَغْضَبْ. He tells him, woe to you, you're angry against Allah. Have I done anything against you? I took the right of Allah from you. And you get upset? So Muhammad ibn Abu Bakr was shocked by this. And he retreats, he goes back. So when he comes out to the people of Fitna, they saw that he was not successful. And they felt that this issue needs to end. So entering now upon Uthman are Qutayrah al-Sukuni and Saudan ibn Hamran al-Sukuni and al-Ghafiqi ibn Harb and some others. When this group entered, they found him sitting and reciting the Qur'an. And it's a magnificent sight. And the mushaf that he was holding in his hands is a large mushaf. And you can see it today. You can see it in museums today. And he's 83 years old. And he's a pious, religious, righteous Khalifa. Sitting in his home, reciting the Qur'an. It was a wonderful sight to see. So even these people, when they entered, they stopped. They were at awe of this. They couldn't attack a man who looked like that. So they stopped in their tracks. And every time people used to enter upon him, he wouldn't look at them. Uthman, he just continues reading the Qur'an. So Al-Ghafiqi enters. And they stop. Tells them, what's wrong with you? They said, don't you see? Look at the Khalifa, how he's sitting. How can you attack someone who looks like that? He tells them, woe to you. And he took a metal object and he struck Uthman radiallahu anhu in his head. And the blood dripped and it came on top of the ayah where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, فَسَيَكْفِيكَهُمُ اللَّهُ, and Allah will suffice you against them. And the Mus'haf is still available today in the museum with the blood on the ayah that says, فَسَيَكْفِيكَهُمُ اللَّهُ. And this historian said, just as the blood dropped on this word, everyone who took part in the fitna was murdered. Na'ila bint al-Farafis, his wife, was there. And she got up from her place to protect him. Sudan raised the sword and he's going to strike Uthman. She puts her hand to protect Uthman radiallahu anhu, and he cuts off her fingers. So she ran away screaming and he struck her. He poked her as she's running away. So he hits Uthman radiallahu anhu in his shoulder and he splits his shoulder. And then he strikes him with his dagger 9 times, saying 3 for Allah and 6 for what I have against you. Then Qutayra gets up and he stood over him and put the sword to his chest. And then he leans against it and enters the sword into his chest. And then one of them got up and began to jump on his chest. Some will tell you he kicked his chest. Others that he jumped on his chest until he crushed his ribs. Then the servants of Uthman felt this movement, this commotion. So they entered the room with their swords. One of them attacks Sudan and kills him immediately. So then the people of Fitna kill this servant. And then another servant enters and he kills Qutayra. So far, Sudan and Qutayra, both of them who struck Uthman, are killed. And then they kill this servant. And then a small battle ensues between the servants and the people of Fitna. But of course, they were outnumbered and they were killed, but they managed to kill a few of the people of Fitna. And in this way, Uthman radiallahu anhu is killed. Dhun-Nurayn, the bearer of the two lights, the righteous Khalifa, one of the 10 given glad tidings of paradise, the husband of Ruqayya and Kulthum, the man who prepared the army of Usra, the one who gave the well of Roma in charity, the one who gathered the Mus'haf and distributed it, and the Imam of the Muslims is killed in such a heartless way. So now, news reaches Ali radiallahu anhu. And he says, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah, may Allah have mercy on Uthman. And Talha says, may Allah have mercy on Uthman and give victory to his cause and to Islam. And the people are remorseful everywhere in Medina. And then there was no one of the Sahaba except that he rejected this idea and displeased at the assassination of Uthman radiallahu anhu. The murderers, after killing him, they said, you make his blood halal and not his wealth? So they started to steal from Bayt al-Mal, the treasury of the Muslims. And the guards, when they saw them, they left because they know they only want the wealth. So they left out of their way and they stole the wealth of the Muslims from Bayt al-Mal. And they enter into the house of Uthman and they stole his personal wealth, and even the cloak that his wife Na'ila was wearing, they stole it from her. But as the blood drips on the ayah, فَسَيَكْفِيكَهُمُ اللَّهُ, none of the people who murdered Uthman remained alive. All of his murderers were killed. And only many years later, 40 years after this incident, there are only 2 that remained alive, who lived for a long time.
Umair ibn Dhabi'
and Kumail ibn Ziyad. Umair and Kumail ibn Ziyad. And they lived on until the time of Al-Hajjaj. We're talking like 40 years later. So one day, Al-Hajjaj orders everyone, there was an army that people had gathered to before, known as the army of Al-Muhallab. A while after, Al-Hajjaj says, everyone who went out with the army of Al-Muhallab, I want them to come out with me again. So Umair
ibn Dhabi,
he had gone out with that army, but at this point when Al-Hajjaj calls for these people to come out again, he was an old man, so he asked to be exempted. So he goes to Al-Hajjaj and he says, let me not go, I have 2 sons, accept them in my place. And the Hajjaj accepted. So then when the man leaves, Ibn Kharija, who was there, said, you know, the affair, he says to Al-Hajjaj, this is a man, his name is Ibn Kharija, he was at the gathering. He saw Umair come in and ask for his permission and then leave. Ibn Kharji says, the affair of Umair is from the issues that used to agitate me very much. So Al-Hajjaj says, and who is Umair? And he says, the Shaykh, meaning the old man. And Al-Hajjaj says,
Umair ibn Dabi?
He says, yes. He says, isn't he one of those who revolted against Uthman? And he says, yes. He says, bring him to me. The man comes back, and Al-Hajjaj commands that his neck be struck. And then, since he rekindles this incident, Al-Hajjaj says, is anyone else still alive from the people of Fitna? And they tell him, yes, Kumail ibn Ziyad al-Nuqi. And he says, where is he? They said he is hiding, because he knows what's going to happen to him. So he says, bring me al-Nuqa. He's from the tribe of from al-Nuqa. He says, bring all of them. And they brought all of them, 2,000 people, his whole tribe, and they put them in prison. He says, wallahi, I will not leave you, and I will cause you anguish if Kumail does not show up. So when he saw this happening to his tribe, Kumail, he said, death is better than fear. Meaning, for me, one person to die is better than 2,000 people to be put in fear and imprisoned because of me. So he says, there's no good in life after this, if my whole tribe is imprisoned because of me. So he emerges, he comes out of hiding, and he enters into Al-Hajjaj. And as he enters, Al-Hajjaj tells him, you're the one I want. Let the captives go. And everyone goes away. So then he says, you are the one. He says, أَنْتَ الَّذِي لَنْ تَرْضَى حَتَّى أَقْعَدْتَ أَمِيرَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ لِلْقِصَاصِ إِذْ دَفَعَكَ عَنْ نَفْسِهِ He says, you are the one who is not satisfied until you cause Amir al-Mu'mineen to sit down for qisas, to get even, because of his preventing you from killing him and defending himself. So the incident here, what Al-Hajjaj is referring to, Umair al-Dabbi and Kumail ibn Ziyad had tried to murder Uthman a long time ago. They went to Medina with this intention. On the way, Umair fell ill and he returns. And Kumail continues. So he lay in ambush between the house of Uthman radiallahu anhu and the masjid. And when Uthman saw him, Kumail looked suspicious. So before he could attack, Uthman attacked him and he hurt him. So he cries out, Amir al-Mu'mineen, you have wounded me, you have injured me for no cause, for no reason. So then he swears to Uthman that he was not trying to murder him or to harm him. He tells him to swear. Swear that you were not trying to murder me or to harm me. And he swears, he says, Wallahi, I have not tried to harm you or anything. So then the companions gathered and they wanted more investigating. They said, let's investigate more. But Uthman said he swore in the name of Allah, so just let it go. See how lenient Uthman radiallahu anhu was. So then he told Kumail to have qisas from him. Because Uthman hit him while he was sitting down. So Uthman sits down and says, hit me just like I hit you. You're standing, I'm sitting. And then Kumail said, I forgive him. And he withdrew his claim for qisas and he returned to Kufa. So this is what Al-Hajjaj was saying. Is that you're the one who was not satisfied until you caused Amir al-Mu'mineen Uthman to sit down for qisas because he was preventing you from hurting him. Kumail says, upon which of those will you kill me? Because I escaped on that day because I didn't kill him or because he forgave me? He's telling him, I didn't kill him and he forgave me. So because of which of these two are you going to kill me? So then Al-Hajjaj tells him, don't concern yourself with that. And the people who were gathering, one of them, his name was Al-Aswad ibn Haytham. And he says, what do you want from this Shaykh? This meaning this old man. He's overtaken with old age. So he's trying to intercede, saying, leave the old man. So then Hajjaj looks at him. And he tells him, by Allah, either you keep your tongue from me, meaning you keep quiet, or I will take your head off with the sword. And the man says, I'll keep quiet. So Al-Hajjaj then calls out, O Adham ibn al-Muhriz! O Adham ibn al-Muhriz! Kill him! So Al-Adham says, that I'll kill him. And the reward is between me and you. And Al-Hajjaj tells him, yes. So he's saying, I'm going to kill him and we'll share the reward for killing this man, one of the people of Fitna. And Al-Hajjaj says, yes. So then Adham tells him, you keep the reward. And if there is any sin, it's on me. What he's telling him, I'm ready to kill this guy even if there's no reward involved. And I'm sure that there is no sin. That's why I'm saying, if there is any sin, I'll take the sin. You keep the reward. So then he cuts off his head. And that was the last of the murderers of Uthman. Even though this was 40 years later, every last one of the murderers of Uthman was killed. Just as it says in the ayah, فَسَيَكْفِيكَهُمُ اللَّهُ. Another narration by Ibn Qilaba. He says that he was in al-Sham when he heard a man mention the hellfire. So he says he sees a man with no arms and no legs, and he's blind and he's falling down on his face. So I asked him about his condition, and he said, I was of those who entered into Uthman's house, and when I came near to him, his wife screams, so I hit her. So Uthman said, may Allah cut off your arms and legs and blind you and enter into the hellfire. He says, I was overtaken by fear and ran away and was afflicted by what you see now. And the only thing that has not come yet is the hellfire. And then Abu Qilaba here says, so I said, بُعْدًا لَكَ وَسُحْقًا لَكَ. I want to be distanced from you. So just to show you, of those who weren't killed, this is their situation. When Uthman radiallahu anhu was murdered, Na'ila bint Farafisa radiallahu anha, she sent to Abdurrahman ibn Udays from the people of Fitna. And he was kind of the closest in relations, blood relations to them. So she tells him, saying, she sends to him saying, you're the closest of the people to us in relations. You're the most expected of all the people of Fitna to assist me. So she's asking for the dead bodies. SubhanAllah, when they killed the servants and they killed Uthman, they left the bodies there. And they left the bodies there for days with Na'ila sitting in the house with dead bodies in the house. So she sends to this man saying, you know, let's bury the dead. So he insulted her, rahimahullah. And at night, Marwan ibn al-Hakam and with him some companion, Zayd ibn Thabit, and went to Ali. And they told him, it's not right for Amir al-Mu'mineen not to be buried until now. And they went to Talha and al-Hasan and Ka'b ibn Malik, and they went to the people of Fitna and said, you killed him, now let us bury him. What else do you want after you killed the man? So the people of Fitna said, no one else goes out with you. We're not going to have a big funeral, just no one else goes out. They feared that the public, if the public sees this, that they're going to revolt against them. So they said, only you go out and bury him. So they went out, and with them were some women and a few young people. And Marwan ibn al-Hakam led the salah because he was the closest relative. And they buried Uthman radiallahu anhu in what later on becomes a part of the Baqi'. They also buried some of the servants at that time. The people of Fitna said, every five people take one body. And there are a few people who went out to do the burying. So every five take one body. So some servants were left in the house. After they buried these the few servants and Uthman, the people of Fitna said, no one else is going to be buried after this. Even though there were still servants dead in the house. So they left the others. So then Na'ila, the wife of Uthman, complains to the people of Fitna. And they came, because she's alone in the house with dead bodies for days. So they came and they pulled them from their feet and threw them in the streets. So the dogs came and ate them. And Uthman radiallahu anhu was buried at night, and very few people prayed over him. And his daughter was crying, and his wife was crying. And this was in the 18th of Dhul Hijjah, in the 35th year after the Hijrah, and he was 83 years old, radiallahu anhu. So the people of Fitna now had total control of Medina, to the point where now they're the people who lead the prayers, over the lead people in prayer. And the one leading the prayer was Al-Ghafiqi, the first man who struck Uthman with the metal rod. Al-Ghafiqi is the one who is leading the salah. And Uthman radiallahu anhu was also fasting on the day of his murder. There's a narration that he had a vision when he was sleeping. He saw a vision where the Prophet ﷺ came to him and said to him, break your fast with us. This is on Thursday. So Friday he woke up fasting, and inshallah he broke his fast as promised. Anas radiallahu anhu says, verily, the Lord, meaning Allah, has a sword sheathed in a scabbard as long as Uthman lives. And when Uthman is slain, that sword shall be drawn and it will not be sheathed until the day of resurrection. Anas radiallahu anhu narrates this as this is a hadith from the Prophet ﷺ. And the Prophet ﷺ has spoken the truth. And after the death of Uthman, until today, there's always killing amongst the Muslims and between the Muslims. And now with the murder of Uthman, we will begin to see many swords unsheathed. And the killing will not stop for many years and will continue just as the Prophet ﷺ said. I would like to look at some of the things that were said in the letter of Na'ila radiallahu anha. She wrote from Na'ila bint al-Farafisa to Amir Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan, "By this letter I call you to Allah who showered his bounties on you and made you Muslims and showed you the light and liberated you from kufr. In the name of Allah I appeal you to rise in the cause of Uthman who was butchered mercilessly. By way of your relationship with him, the responsibility to avenge his blood devolves," meaning is passed or delegated, "on you. It is the command of Allah that if there is bloodshed between two groups of Muslims, you should strive for peace amongst them. But if any group transgresses, take action against the rebels and kill them. Some people rebelled against Uthman without just cause. You know what high position Uthman commanded in Islam. He was very close and dear to the Prophet ﷺ, and he never coveted the Khilafah," meaning he never wanted the Khilafah. "He was chosen as the Khalifa by the people, and during the 12 years of his office, he worked day and night for the welfare of the people. During his Khilafah, extensive conquests were made. Immense wealth flowed into the public treasury, and the stipends," Uthman radiallahu anhu had made a salary for everyone in the Ummah, "and the stipends of the people were increased, and the people became more prosperous. Instead of appreciating the benefits of his rule, some miscreants, because of ulterior considerations, conspired against him." And the letter is very long, but we're just taking the highlights. Then we skip along, and she says, "The rioters besieged the house of Uthman. They stood at the door fully armed. They did not allow any food or water to enter the house. We were denied the use of water from the well which Uthman had purchased with his own money." The letter is really inciting the people. And she says, continuing on, "We threw ourselves," after he was killed, one came to cut his head off, "we threw ourselves on the body of Uthman," so they would not cut his head, "and they pulled us away and robbed us of our ornaments. I am sending you along with this letter the bloodstained clothes of the Khalifa. See to it that the blood does not go unavenged. May Allah have mercy on the soul of Uthman, and may the curse of Allah be upon his murderers." So the letter reaches Muawiyah radiallahu anhu in Al-Sham, and he reads the letter and the blood begins to boil. And he hangs up this bloodstained garment of Uthman radiallahu anhu up on the minbar. And every day 70,000 warriors gather awaiting the command so they can avenge the blood of Uthman. So meanwhile, now back in Medina, the people of Fitna, they started to try to find the Khalifa after Uthman to pledge to. But they couldn't agree on who should the Khalifa should be. The people of Egypt wanted Ali radiallahu anhu to be the next Khalifa. The people of Al-Kufa wanted the Zubayr ibn al-Awwam. The people of Basra wanted Talha ibn Ubaidullah. So all of them had agreed to kill Uthman, but they had not agreed on who they're going to put as a successor. So each group tries to push their person to become the Khalifa. And all refuse. This is 5 days. There's no Khalifa and they're trying to find the Khalifa. And the armies have arrived. Armies who came to support the Medinians and to support Uthman radiallahu anhu, they arrived, but they stopped outside of Medina. Now they stopped and they're sending letters to their Umara, the emirs who sent them. Because they don't know to enter upon what state, attack whom, to kill whom, who's in charge, what to, so they sent letters back now waiting for orders. So the people of Fitna now, to understand their situation, they're afraid. They're afraid the army will enter and they'll get killed. So now they're in a hurry to choose another Khalifa. Because the armies, the wisdom behind is that the armies won't invade to fight the Khalifa. There's a Khalifa in Medina. Armies are not going to invade Medina to fight the Khalifa in there. So by mixing up affairs like this, they can all escape safely. But they couldn't find anyone who was going to accept the bay'ah, the pledge. So after Ali and Zubayr and Talha, who else is left from the 6 people of Shura? There is, of course, the 6 people of Shura are Ali and Uthman and Zubayr and Talha and Abdurrahman ibn Auf and Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas and Abdullah ibn Umar. And Ali and Zubayr and Talha refused. And Ibn Auf had died, radiallahu anhu. And Uthman radiallahu anhu was murdered. And there was Sa'ad and Ibn Umar. So they went to Sa'ad, radiallahu anhu. They were the only ones left, Sa'ad and Ibn Umar now. So they went to Sa'ad, radiallahu anhu, and he totally refused to become the Khalifa. So they went to Abdullah ibn Umar. And he refused even more than Sa'ad did. So now the people of Fitna lost hope. No one wants to become the Khalifa. And this is something that's agreed upon by all classical books, all classical works agree on this, that Ali and Zubair and Talha and Sa'ad ibn Abi Waqqas and Abdullah ibn Umar, all of them totally refused the Khilafah. So none of them would have supported the people of Fitna because they want to be the Khalifa instead of Uthman. So now they lost hope, the people of Fitna. This is 5 days after the death of Uthman. And they gathered and said that if the people of Medina don't agree upon someone, we fear that Muawiyah will become the new Khalifa. And he's from Bani Umayyah, and wallahi, if he wins it, he will not leave any of you alive. If Muawiyah becomes a Khalifa, he's not going to leave any of you. So the heads of the people of Fitna gathered, and they gathered the people of Medina, and they said, we give you 2 days. Now the people of Fitna, they're threatening the people of Medina. We give you 2 days. Wallahi, if you don't pledge to someone in 2 days, we will kill Ali and Talha and Zubair and many others. So they threatened them that they're going to massacre the Sahaba. And the people of Medina knew that they're not bluffing. Why? Because the army is right outside. So some Sahaba then went to Ali and asked him to become the Khalifa. And he refused. He said, we're heading into very difficult times. They told him, we ask you by Allah, don't you see what we see? Fear Allah, they're going to kill us and they're going to kill you. And Ali radiallahu anhu tells him, only because of this situation do I agree. And he stipulated to them that they obey him and they do as he says. And he tells them, if you're not going to obey me, then leave me be. Just, if you're not going to obey me, you might as well not have me get into this. And if you leave me be, then I am but one of you, except that I am the most attentive and most obedient to the next Khalifa. So saying, if I become one of you and you don't choose me as a Khalifa, I will become the most obedient to the next Khalifa. It shows you how the dunya wasn't in the hearts of the Sahaba. So they agreed. And agreed to meet the next day in the masjid. So then they gathered the people of Medina, and the Sahaba gathered, and the people of Fitna liked this idea. But they knew that if Talha and Zubair don't pledge to Ali, then this is not going to work. Because for the people of Medina, if Talha and Zubair pledge, that means this is genuine, this is legitimate. But if they don't, no one's going to really consider this as Ali as the Khalifa. So when Talha and Zubair heard the news, they said, no, we will pledge to him only if he begins with killing the murderers of Uthman. We won't accept delaying this issue and will not accept anything else but the killing of the murderers of Uthman. This was their stipulation of Talha and Zubair. So now the news reaches the people of Fitna. And they said, wallahi, if Talha and Zubair don't pledge, then it won't work. It's not going to be a legitimate Khilafah. And if they want our death, what do we do? At the same time, they want you dead. This is their stipulation. So they decided the only way was to force them to pledge. So the next day, Ali radiallahu anhu comes and he ascends the pulpit and he says, O people, this affair, meaning the Khilafah, is your affair and no one has a right upon it except the one you put in charge. And we have parted last night, meaning me and the Sahaba, consultation that they had, upon a decision. So if you like, I will accept. Otherwise, I have nothing against anyone. He was telling them, with the Sahaba last night, we sat and we talked, and we parted upon a decision that I'm the Khalifa. If you people accept, it's fine. And if you don't, I have nothing against anybody. Some of the Sahaba got up and they said, we are still upon what we parted with you yesterday. We're upon the same agreement. And this was witnessed by Talha and Zubair, this khutbah. So Zubair was brought over by a group of the people of Fitna. They went and brought him to the masjid. And this group was under the leadership of Hukaym ibn Jabala, the thief, as we said. And he was the leader of the rebels. And he brought him with the sword. They forced him to come. And Talha was brought by Malik ibn al-Harith. He's known as Al-Ashtar al-Nukhi. He was a warrior, a champion warrior. They forced him at the point of the sword. So Zubair and Talha were forced to come. And when Ali spoke and the Sahaba accepted, Hukaym put the sword at the neck of Zubair. And Al-Ashtar put the sword at the neck of Talha and told him, get up and pledge. So then Talha comes, the first man to pledge. He comes, and of course he's coerced, he's forced to pledge. And His right hand, as you all know, had been paralyzed in the battle of Uhud from defending the Prophet ﷺ on the day of Uhud. He defended the Prophet ﷺ so much with his right hand, stopping with it arrows and defending the face of the Prophet ﷺ with it, that it became paralyzed. He could never use it for the rest of his life. Some narrations will tell you even some of his fingers were cut off. And for that reason, Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu, whenever Uhud was mentioned in front of him, he would say that was the day of Talha. Because no one had done as he had done. So he lifts his paralyzed right hand with his left hand, and he puts it in the hand of Ali. And a witness who saw this, he said, the first hand to pledge is a paralyzed hand. This is an affair that will not succeed. And this man, he sees a sign in this. The first hand to pledge is a paralyzed hand. He sees this as a sign that this is not going to work. And then Zubair radiallahu anhu pledges, and there was a sword at his neck as well. And then the other Sahaba start to pledge, and then the other people pledge. This takes place in the 25th of the Hijjah, 7 days after the death of Uthman radiallahu anhu. So now, the new Khalifa of the Muslims is Ali radiallahu anhu. So let us pause briefly just to talk about him for a minute. His name is Ali ibn Abi Talib, and the name of Abu Talib is Abdul Manaf ibn Abdul Muttalib. The name of Abdul Muttalib is Shayba ibn Hashim, whose name is Amr ibn Abdul Manaf. And his kunya, his patronymic, is Abu al-Hasan. And he was also referred to as Abu Turab, as he was called by the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. His mother was Fatima bint Asad ibn Hashim. And the virtues of Ali radiallahu anhu is that he was of the 10 who were given glad tidings of paradise. And the son-in-law of the Prophet ﷺ, because he married Fatima, the daughter of Muhammad ﷺ. And he was of the earliest of Muslims. The second person ever to become a Muslim, Ali radiallahu anhu. And he was of the scholars of the Muslimin, and of the heroes, and the most courageous, and known for his piety, and for being ascetic, and an orator, good speaker at the same time, and a warrior like none other. And he had never worshipped idols. And that's why we say Ali karram Allahu wajhu, which means Allah honored his face. Because his face never prostrated to idols. And he was of those who had witnessed the battle of Badr and Uhud and all the major battles with the Prophet ﷺ except for Tabuk. And in Tabuk, the Prophet ﷺ put him in charge of Medina and told him, are you not pleased to be to me as Harun was to Musa, except that there is no prophet after me? So this is the place of Ali radiallahu anhu. And many times during battles, the Prophet ﷺ would give him the standard. And his description was that he was a short and muscular man. They described him saying that between his shoulders were the muscles like that of a lion. And when he became old, he was heavy. And he was bald and he had much hair. So how are you bald and you have much hair? He was bald in his head, but he had much hair like in his arms and his legs. And he had a huge white beard, describing it. They said it was filling that which was between his shoulders and his chest. And they described that he had a large stomach. So Ali radiallahu anhu becomes the Khalifa. And he gives his first khutbah. And in it he says, verily Allah has revealed a book of guidance, and revealed in it that which is good and that which is evil. So take the good and leave the evil. He says, perform the fara'id, for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will take you to paradise. Verily Allah has sanctified certain things, made them holy, that are well known to us, and made violating them haram. As if you can see hints here to the people of fitna. And made the sanctity of the Muslim greater than all other sanctities. Then he starts to mention ikhlas, and he mentions tawheed, and then he mentions the hadith that the Muslim is the one whom the Muslims are safe from his tongue and his hand except with its right. So he's mentioning all these hadith, and they're like a message to the people of fitna. And then he tells it is not permissible to harm a Muslim except with due cause.